T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
That home run that kind of scraped the wall, but it was a huge moment for the White Sox in the game. That guy, man, it bears out when we talk about wins above replacement. That guy's their best player. He's got some competition now. He's got some competition from the guy at the top of the lineup who we're going to speak about momentarily. But Moncada is that dude. Luis Robert, you've seen it. He's comfortable. He's confident. He's so much fun. He's such a fun player. And he's got good instincts for stealing bases. It's not enough to just be fast to steal bases. It helps, but it's not enough. You also have to have a kind of a knack for it, and that first step speed that he has is fun to watch.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
He's not the only person on the White Sox that is fun to watch. It is fun to watch just about all of them right now. The ones that are healthy. That is an issue. Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock today. There's a lot for us to discuss, and we have a bunch of great guests that are going to be on the show. Lynn Casper is going to join me at 12:20. We're going to talk about the white-hot Chicago Cubs, too. They've won 5 in a row. The White Sox have won 6 in a row. Anthony Heron is going to be on with us at 1 o'clock. The Power Fives are all figuring out their plans, and the best laid plans. The Big Ten came out with their schedule today. We will ask Big Ant about that. We will ask him what he's hearing lately and what it means that UConn's like, no, we're not going to play. We're just not going to do it. What about in the spring? Nope, probably not then either. So we'll get his thoughts on that coming up a little bit after 1 o'clock. Gabby Williams of the Chicago Sky is going to join me. She's having a great year. Maybe her best year as a pro. So we'll talk to her what it's like living in the bubble. Because I don't know how fun that would be. Although, if you're playing ball and you're with your friends, maybe it's more fun than I can think. Maybe this is one of those issues where me getting older might have something to do with how I feel about it. Because for her, Gabby's like, what, 22, 23 years old? I mean, for her, it probably is pretty cool. For me, I'm like, I don't know. I probably just play games and then just go lay down. That would be pretty much all I would do. They're out there fishing and all sorts of stuff. So we'll pick her brain around 1:25 this afternoon. I wanted to start by talking about the two baseball teams in town. We, at least for today, for Wednesday, August 5th, 2020, Chicago is the center of the baseball universe. Don't stop believing. Yeah. You got the White Sox winning 6 games in a row, starting with that last game in the series against Cleveland. You have the Cubs just saying, all right, you want to put these opponents in front of us? We'll just knock them down. We'll send Kyle Hendricks out there, and he'll do what he does.
and we'll win these games. And now look at where things stand with both of the teams. The Cubs have a 4-game lead after 11 games played. They're 9-2. And the White Sox have won 6 in a row.
Don't stop.
Yeah!
Woo!
Someone told me that I guess, made it into the intros at the G rate, which I think is crazy, but also outstanding. After starting off rocky, the White Sox find themselves a game and a half up on the Indians and 2 games behind Minnesota, which is cool. And I'm glad that we're celebrating winning baseball. I threw it out on Twitter. At Lawrence W. Holmes is where you can find me on Twitter. I like to have a little bit of fun. Like, usually we would do this during, like, a Bears game where if things are going awry, I say, oh, give me a GIF to explain how you feel. So we thought that we'd do it in a positive manner today. And I have been very pleased and been made to laugh by people's reactions. People are excited. A lot of Spider-Man memes have popped up because both teams are playing really well right now. We're 18% through the season. It's a strange, strange thing. It really is. But there was a lot of fun to be had last night watching both of those games. By the way, is it just me, or I never feel like Wilson Contreras gets a cheap home run? Like, it's always well struck. It's never one of those kind of floating to the wall type deals. It's always, like, out in the line. And I found a thing that I like now about, I mean, I've gotten used to watching games without fans overall. But one thing that I particularly like about watching games at Wrigley with no fans, I don't even know if it could be heard on the radio version. I didn't check. Herbie, will you do me a favor and load up Jason Hayward's home run, both radio and television, if we have them? Because on the television version, you could hear a nice little boomp as it hits the, maybe it was the Under Armour sign or whatever it was that was out there. I don't know if that's the case with the radio version, but it was fun to see Jay Hay get loose and get the ball out of the yard. Here you go.
And now the 1-2, the stretch and the delivery. Driven in the air, deep right field. That goes Soler. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Jason Hayward, a 2-run homer. Just like that, Cubs lead 2-1.
That was courtesy of Cubs Radio. So, Herbie, do we even have the TV version of it? I should have brought this up before the show started. That's
I have the
me.
TV version, but I put it into like a... together as the part of the Jasons.
Oh, okay. You know, run them. Okay. I'm good with that.
All right.
And Hayward drives it to deep right. Way back there. It's gone. And the Cubs have the lead. That ball pounded by Jason Kipnis. It is gone. 4 starts. 4 extra base hits. 4-1.
Kip, hooray. The Jasons getting it done here tonight.
A lot of Jasons.
There are. And you could hear it more prominently on Kipnis' home run. But it's still great. There's a nice little thud sound that happens when a ball is hit out there and it lands on the advertising. That's a lot of fun. When we started the show, has Mitch completely like bought in on the Cubs? Is that what we're hearing?
The first place Chicago Cubs.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Mitch said, I ain't waiting. 18% of this season is gone. Get these people to listen to Cubs games on the score. Well, I'm sure they are, because this has been a really good start. Now, here's the thing. In this first segment of the show, I figured that we would just keep it light, have a little fun, keep it positive. Trust me, there are things to talk about with both teams that aren't great. And if you're a Cub fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you're a White Sox fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But why not? Why do that? Why, harsh your mellow right now this afternoon? we can live in the space for a few more minutes of both the Cubs and the White Sox being good. Whenever you hear Mitch change the imaging up here on the score, you know that things are serious.
The first place Chicago Cubs.
When he has to send a script out to Big Voice Guy, you know that he is ready, that he is paying attention, and that things are big. Because if Big Voice Guy says it, it must be true. Now, it's actually true. But why not? I mean, why not have a little bit of fun? This is the thing that we were all hoping would happen with both of these teams. You're hoping that the White Sox and their youth, that it starts to come to the forefront, and you see guys living up to their potential. And you're seeing it with Moncada and Aloy. Aloy, that was a bomb that he hit. And then you add in Jose Abreu coming through over the last couple of nights with big hits when the White Sox needed it. Like, that's his role. That's supposed to be his role. Big money moment for your veteran RBI leader. He comes through with a big hit. And they keep the White Sox starters over the last time through the rotation, granted there's been a little bit of injury stuff in there, have been solid. And the bullpen, I was texting Herbie last night because after one pitch, I was like, Colum May doesn't look right. He didn't have that crackle in his stuff. By the way, crackle is an underrated candy bar. But he was effective enough. He got people out. I don't know if we'll see him out there in a save situation tonight, but he did what he needed to do last night. Get people out, get them out of the game, get them out of Milwaukee. And now the White Sox are going to play in Chicago 23 out of the next 26 days. So that's good. That's a really good thing for them. We will have the conversation about the other stuff. You know, the injuries that are just piling up. And with Kimbrel, I'm starting to feel for him. Because last night, I actually felt like he had good stuff last night. The knuckle curve and his fastball, I thought was good. But you got to love Rossi being like, I'm not messing around. Give me the ball and get out of here. We got a game to win. We'll figure out another time for you to get some work. But right now, we're trying to hang on to this lead because we don't want to lose to the Royals. No one wants to lose to the Royals because the Royals are not good. All right, so Herbie, before we go to break, can we hit off both the White Sox fans with a little Don't Stop and Cubs fans with Big Voice Guy?
Don't stop.
Yeah!
Woo! The first place Chicago Cubs
are going to be talked about in the next segment when I talk with Lynn Casper next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Even the crowd noise, the fake crowd noise is nervous. I can tell. I can hear it.
Nice play, Bryant. Throw to first. Cubs win. That ball was hit like a rocket, and Bryant made it look easy, and the Cubs sweep the two-game series and the five-game homestand.
Wow, deep breath, exhale. Namaste.
Defense at third the last two games has been excellent. Chris Bryant last night, David Bote the night before that. Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Lynn Casper does play-by-play for Cubs baseball on the Marquee Network. He's also one of our baseball analysts here on The Score. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you could just go to alpamonteford.com. Lynn, this has been a lot of fun over the first couple of weeks of baseball for the Cubs. What's the thing that as you're watching the game stands out to you about this team?
It's really hard to pinpoint one thing because so much has been so good. Obviously, there have been some bullpen issues, but just about everything else has been incredibly solid. I guess where I'll go with that answer is I just think they've tightened up defensively and with their base running. I think they made 64 outs on the bases last year. You know, that's running into a caught stealing or tagging up and getting thrown out or getting picked off, trying to take third base when you should stay at second, things like that. That was a real problem last year for the Cubs. And when you think about the 2016, I know we don't want to compare every Cubs team from here on out to the 16 champions, but they ran the bases well, and they had probably the best defensive season I think we'll ever see in our lifetime. I mean, they were that good, and I think we're seeing signs of some of those things now where they don't make a lot of mistakes. They get early runs, and they're able to tack on late, which has been hugely helpful, Lawrence, because of the issues the bullpen has had late, particularly Craig Kimbrel.
Let's save Kimbrel for a little bit later because I want to talk about the starters on this team and how good they've been. When I asked Rossi about it, his approach is, hey, look, these guys are good. That's why. I feel like he's probably not – he's deflecting a little bit of credit. And so I'd love to know, is there anything in the change of approach for the starters, or is it like Rossi said, guys are just good and they're just – off to a good start?
I don't know ultimately what that answer is. I can just tell you that qualitatively, I guess, being somewhat around the team and talking to people as I can, as we're socially distanced because we're outside the bubble, I think this team, once they got the go-ahead to get to summer camp and to get this season underway and hopefully complete it, there's a big understanding of what's at stake. You have a lot of veteran guys who we don't know how much longer they're going to be in the big leagues. John Lester would be one of those guys. When Jose Quintana comes back, he's due to be a free agent. This is an important year for him. We don't know how long guys like Chris Bryant and Javi Baez and Kyle Schwarber are going to be in this core. So as the clock ticks, even though this is a strange, bizarre, weird year, as Rossi said, I don't care if we play five games, if there's a trophy at the end of the rainbow, I want it. And so I think there was a lot of focus about let's do everything right, put ourselves in the best position possible to go out and just kick butt every single night, and they've been able to do that. Sure, there's probably some luck involved with no positive tests. I think they've done all the protocol stuff correctly. I'm sure a lot of other teams have as well and haven't been nearly as fortunate. But for right now, everything's clicking on all cylinders. And when you do that for a week and a half, 2 weeks in a 60-game season, you've set yourself up to be in a great position. So, I think circumstances probably play into it. And I also think David Ross has very quickly commanded that presence in the clubhouse. I've already seen the intensity just chatting with him before games. He wants to win badly, and he's to the pro.
Len Casper joining us here on The Score as we talk about the Cubs and this hot start that they are off to. It's funny that you bring it up, Len, because I had a conversation with Jason Hayward during the quarantine, and he was great because he's always great. And he was talking about how there was a text exchange between the players, and they were all watching The Last Dance, and that they were kind of using it as motivation. And I was on with our sister station in Milwaukee at the beginning of the season, and they had asked me about the Cubs, and I said, look, this is a proud group. And this group was embarrassed last year about how things went. They're motivated and they're angry. And it's part of the reason that I felt like they had a good chance to be competitive in this thing. I think that it's interesting that a lot of times you hear athletes talk about stuff like that and not put it into practice. It seems like this group of Cubs is putting all that stuff into practice.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think they've taken advantage of their schedule here early on. The one thing I felt going into this season was when you have series against the Pirates and now the Royals, that the Reds went 3-3 against the Tigers. I mean, that's a killer. when you have games against teams you should beat. And notice the White Sox are doing that. They're winning the games they should win. And so, you know, it's just, it's kind of like the analogy is, you know, I don't know how much you run on a treadmill, but typically you get on the treadmill and then you start hitting the up button, right? So you, you go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5, and you probably go to 10. I usually sit about 6.5 miles an hour. But it's like jumping on that treadmill and it's already going 8 miles an hour. That's what this season is. So even though you had 3 summer camp games against other teams, it's like you got to ramp up incredibly quickly. You got to be ready to go on opening day. And I can't speak to other teams and whether anyone felt that they weren't quite ready. I just know watching this Cubs team, they were ready for opening night when that first pitch was thrown.
What do you think is different about Tyler Chatwood?
Confidence. You know, his misses 2 years ago were non-competitive. And even when he misses the strike zone and doesn't get a swing, they're competitive pitches. And that, you don't have to always throw strikes. My great partner, Jim Deshaies, says you just have to show the illusion of strikes. His ball moves so much with the cutter and the curve. His changeup is a really good pitch. And then that sinking fastball, that all you got to do is let that hitter think it might be a strike. And once you get ahead of him, it creates a big advantage. And I just think he's confident and knows that he's back to the guy the Cubs signed a couple of years ago.
It's fun to see him succeed because it was painful to watch him 2 years ago. And there were moments where you'd see him be a little bit better. It's just seeing a guy that clearly has the stuff. And Theo would always talk about like the things that they saw, even though he was pitching in Colorado, that they felt that he could come in and be successful with the Cubs. When a guy struggles and then finds his way back, it's a very cool thing.
It is, and I've gotten to know him fairly well, and I just appreciate how he's tackled it. He's very upfront. He's honest. No excuses. Took all of the responsibility to heart. And all he did was work his tail off to try to figure it out. And, you know, going back to your first point, Lawrence, almost everybody has stuff now, right? Like, it's rare to see a guy where you go, his stuff's not very good. You know, you have a few of those guys, and they're able to get by on their guile, and it's usually guys at the end of their career. But everybody seems to have stuff. So that's the baseline right there. To me, it's what you do with that stuff and the fact that you have to be able to pitch to a scouting report. And when you don't know where the ball is going, which he didn't know in 2018, you can't pitch to your strength or to the other team's weakness because you cannot execute your pitches. So, yeah, it sounds like a very simplistic answer. I just think he now knows when I throw this pitch, this is where I'm going to put it, and that's exactly where he puts it.
Lynn, I know Alec Mills is his own man, but I have to say, in watching him pitch so far this year, I wonder if he asked questions of Kyle Hendricks, because their top stuff, their fastball usually tops out about the same, around 90. The fact that he is changing speeds and eye level on people, his last start was so much fun, because how often do you get to see a big looping curveball that major league players can't hit?
Very rare. Yeah, they're very similar. You know, and they pitched kind of back to back in the rotation, 5-1. But I don't think that really matters necessarily. You know, he'll get to 91, maybe 92. Kyle, generally, you know, 88, 89. But the stuff is similar. I think he does rely on his curveball a little bit more, whereas Kyle uses his changeup a little more often than Alec does. But I do think it's important that you have guys in a rotation who are similar and who can compare notes. And if one guy can get a certain team out, the other guy can watch how he did it, and that is instructive. So I think once Alec sees a guy like Kyle do his thing, it has to help him. And I think there was a lot of motivation the other night to beat Kansas City. You know, he's not a real boisterous guy, but it clearly meant a lot to him to make it hurt, as he said, every time he faces the Royals.
And as you said, everyone comes in now. They're throwing 96, 97, 98. They got stuff. I wonder if there is a place for people like Kyle and Alec that
can do some stuff with speed. And really, like, that differential is hard to make up. When you're talking about 25 miles per hour from one pitch to the next, it can screw up hitters that are kind of keyed up to go after the velocity of these guys that they're facing.
No question. And I think White Sox fans will see this once they see Dallas Keuchel pitch a little more often. Joe Maddon taught me this a few years ago, just by the way he goes about his business. When the industry zigs, you have a few people who zag, right? Joe started the shifting phenomenon, and by the end of his tenure with the Cubs, Lawrence, the Cubs employed fewer shifts than just about anybody in the game because everybody kind of went in one direction. And I think a guy like Dallas Keuchel and a Kyle Hendricks and an Alec Mills, there is absolutely a place for guys who can work the lower part of the zone and the lower part of the velocity. And guys are messed up because they're keyed up to hit 96, 97, 98, and all of a sudden it's 87, 88, 74. In the case of Mills, as you said, 66. It has to mess up the timing of a hitter. We've seen Kyle Hendricks adjust his sights and work more up in the zone to try to get out of those swing planes. But I think velocity, that part of it, is more important. And the lack of it absolutely has a place in this game.
What are the people around the Cubs say is happening with Kimbrel? Because last night, I got to tell you, I know it was only just a few pitches, Len, but I actually thought that he had good stuff last night. The fastball was topping out at 97. He got the knuckle curve over. So what do they think is the issue, and is anyone worried that he might be tipping?
I haven't heard anyone say that they think he's tipping, but you do uncover everything you can, turn over every rock to try to figure out what in the world is going on. The stuff looks good to me, too. And one of my theories is that, you know, it's gone down maybe a tick on the fastball from 98 to 97 or 96, but not that much. Everybody else throws that hard now, and so maybe the approach he had was a little more unique, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago. So that could be part of it. The other thing I see, and I'm no expert on it, is that guys are just not swinging at his curveball. He's thrown a lot of curves early in the count, and it just seems like they're just saying, nope, 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 nope. And then when they get their first fastball that's in the zone, they're absolutely whacking it. And I don't know the answer to it. I do know that they're going to continue to work with him, and they want him to pitch in big spots in 2020. And as nervous as that makes Cubs fans, I still think if the Cubs are going to get to where they want to be, and that is to win the World Series, you're still going to have to do everything you can to get Craig Kimbrel figured out, because the resume is there. And if you look at teams that win the World Series, generally they have closers with a long resume.
When Jason Kipnis signed with the Cubs, it was like, oh, that's kind of an interesting signing that the Cubs made, where it doesn't really cost you that much, relatively speaking, and it doesn't really hurt you because it's a position that you're trying to fill. He's been pretty good so far. Do you think that he ends up playing there every day, or is Rossi keep moving this thing around where he's going to find spots for Kipnis and for Bodie to get opportunities to play there?
You know what? Kipnis almost is like a rookie in this sense. David Ross has had him in the lineup four times. He has had an extra base hit, including a couple of home runs, in each of those starts. And I think what David is doing is he's putting Kipnis in favorable matchups against the opposing team's starting pitcher. So I view him as kind of a maybe 2 to 3 starts a week, maybe one at second base, one or two at DH. But I think Rossi likes Nico Hoerner as his generally everyday second baseman, defensively, and his athleticism. And also, he brings a little dynamic thing to this lineup in that Nico doesn't strike out much. He doesn't walk a whole lot, but he's a contact guy. And because they have so many other guys in the lineup who do a lot of other things, including hit the ball out of the ballpark, to have someone who can move the baseball, particularly if you get into an extra inning situation with a runner at second to start an inning, Nico Hoerner is very valuable. So I think Kipnis is a part-time player but a guy who's going to be put in the most favorable positions possible. And even if he has a 3-for-3 with 2 home runs, that type of deal, if the next night's matchup's not good, I think Rossi will absolutely have him on the bench, maybe bring him in for a key pinch hit moment and have Horner in that lineup.
What have you learned about Rossi in 11 games the Cubs have played?
He looks the part. I think he's going to do this for a long time. He's already made, I think, some tough decisions, including, yanking Craig Kimbrell in a couple of save situations and not letting his team lose the game. I could be wrong, but I think, Lawrence, Kimbrell's made 3 appearances and the Cubs have won all 3 games.
That is correct.
If I'm not mistaken. So a blown save or a guy giving up runs doesn't necessarily mean you lose the game. And I give Rossi a lot of credit for not saying, you know what, he's my guy, I'm going to let him sink or swim. He's understood that these games matter more than they would in a normal year. And I think that builds a lot of credibility and equity in that clubhouse, too, that guys know that he's only going to do what's best for the team when it comes to wins and losses, while keeping in mind that he's going to do everything he can individually to make sure guys are okay. He had a conversation with Kimbrell when he pulled him out of the game last night. I don't know what he said to him, but the reaction from Kimbrell seemed to be, yep, I totally get it. And I think that's a good trait to have as a manager.
It's pretty great to have the Cubs winning 5 in a row, the White Sox winning 6 in a row, and people being excited about baseball in Chicago. Lynn, thanks as always for your time, and I appreciate you jumping on.
You got it, Lawrence. Anytime, man. We'll talk to you soon.
That is Lynn Casper. He is the play-by-play voice of your Chicago Cubs on the Marquee Network. I should have asked him about Gracie. They were doing some fun stuff on the broadcast last night. One thing in particular I pulled and we'll bring back a little bit later on. But there's also another team in town for us to discuss. I want to talk a little bit about the White Sox and their win last night, but also the other stuff. People getting hurt. I feel like Ricky Renteria is kind of the opposite view that I have when it comes to the injuries with the pitchers. So we will discuss that coming up next here on The Score.
Hey, Score sports betting analyst Joe Ostrowski here. Join me for Early Odds, Saturdays from 8 to 9 a.m., where I cover the latest on the ever-growing sports betting landscape. We went so long without much to bet on, but now we have baseball, basketball, hockey, golf majors, soccer, horse racing, with football around the corner. Early Odds, Saturday mornings, 8 to 9, on Sports Radio 670, The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Brought to you by Hawthorne Racecourse. Download the app at clubhawthorneapp.com.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Got to be a fastball here, 1-0. Jose rips it to left field and gives the Sox the lead. 3-2 Sox.
Jose Abreu over the last couple of games has come through with some big hits. The White Sox have won 6 games in a row. Lucas Giolito very strong last night. And they were able to score enough, get the win, hang on, and get to come home for 23 of the next 26 days, at least spent in Chicago because there's some, games with the Cubs in there. So, it feels pretty good to be a White Sox fan this week. Last week didn't feel great. This week feels pretty great. That they're doing big things and they find themselves winning games in fun fashion, even though those games, they feel like they drag. I mean, last night's game was fine. The night before was not fine because it just seemed like it went on and on forever. What I like about their lineup is the thing that a lot of people were projecting for their lineup. Their lineup seems to have enough pieces in it that anyone can get you. Anyone in this White Sox lineup, with a couple of exceptions, can get you. And last night, 2 nights ago, it was Moncada. Moncada gets you. Obviously, Abreu comes through with a big hit late. Last night, it was Eloy Jimenez who got you. And, I mean, You talk about an easy power stroke to center field. He absolutely destroyed this ball and put it in the camera well. It was a thing of beauty, and it looked super easy for him to do.
Eloy cracks this ball. Deep center field. Bring him home. We are tied at two. That center field power is mammoth.
The reason he got a slider first pitch was because he hit a 96-mile-an-hour high fastball the last time up. And that's exactly why a careless slider turned into a tie game.
Yeah! It was the B-side of Careless Whisper. Careless Slider. I mean, Wham made some music back in the day, man. They were putting together some tracks.
Yeah, you see how George Michael struggled in his solo career because Andrew Ridgeley was carrying all the weight.
Right. Andrew Ridgeley got the requisite amount of respect and love for his contribution to Wham. And they keep popping up in Deadpool movies, so it's totally fine. But when Steve said that, I was like, yep, Careless Whisper is going to be on the radio show tomorrow for no good reason. I like the idea of Careless Slider, but Careless Whisper, even better. Well, let me ask you, Mr. Locked On White Sox. That's the podcast that Herbie does. He and Chris Tannehill, they review every game. So you should subscribe to their podcast because they do a pod literally after every game breaking down what happened. The injuries with this White Sox team, they're starting to mount. And I'm glad that they've been able to overcome them so far, but I'm starting to get a little worried. Are you at the point where you're worried or is everything fine?
Oh, no. Pitching especially, you know, we had Ronaldo leave earlier in the year. He's going to be throwing today off a mound. He's going to start his throwing program. And then Rodon going out kind of started to look like that starting rotation is not good. It wasn't good at the start of the season with the starting five. After Cease, you're like, this is kind of questionable. Now with two guys out, man, it's very troublesome. The hitters, as you say, if they get hurt, we have enough depth to play over it. Like, Lurie Garcia is a solid player. He's playing for Timmy right now, and Mendick had to come in for your man last night. I don't want to say the name that you usually call him, Nick Madrigal.
Should Slappy. I say
it? Slappy, yeah.
Yeah, he's a slap hitter.
Yeah.
That's why.
So Slappy.
Ozzie said on the post-game show, he goes, yeah, you know, I think I really like that guy because he's a punch and Judy hitter like I was. So, yeah, I'm Slappy. That's him.
So, you know, Slappy with a really dumb play, really dumb base running mistake, and then he gets hurt on the same play. So, insult to injury right there. And so, yeah, I'm not worried about the actual everyday players. I'm worried about the pitching staff. Ricky had some good words yesterday, said that Carlos is probably not done for the season, and like I said before, that Raylo is going to start a throwing program today.
I'm concerned about all of that. Ricky just kind of dismissed out of hand the ramp-up being a reason why they've had three guys, right? Because it's Jimmy Lambert, too. They've had three guys go down with some arm issues. I'm not saying that it's cause and effect, and this is one of the things I was saying yesterday. It's not causal, but I don't think that he can just dismiss the idea until we know a little bit more about this. It makes me happy that Reynaldo Lopez is going to start throwing again with Rodon. I feel for him because he can just never get his body right. And I know that they need him. They want him in the rotation. I don't know if it's ever going to work for Rodon as a starter in the majors. And this year, maybe you have to modify his role. And that he is someone that comes out and gives you 20 pitches. or maybe a couple of innings. Because there's part of me that's like, they should probably just tell him, we'll see you in 2021.
Don't you think that is his better role, though? Like, as a guy that comes in late, Josh Hader style?
Yes, I think that he could be very effective, honestly, being the setup man to Colum A. That's what I think. I wouldn't have him in, like, what you and I have now kind of designated as the Ross Detweiler role. I think that, if you, especially with the new rules where you're facing three batters, I think he could be super effective in that role where he could just let it go. Let it go. Let it go. He could just do that for an inning, hopefully. I just want him to be healthy enough to be able to pitch again, because it's been a long road back, and he just keeps running into these roadblocks physically, which is why I'm kind of like, maybe you shut it down for him. Hopefully, Reynaldo Lopez is good to go, but if we're talking about him throwing off of flat ground now, then we're probably a minimum of 2 weeks from him helping your team in a starting situation. I'd imagine there's going to be some towel throwing and some sim games with the Schaumburg boys. That should be a band. Okay, you can text this in. You can help me out with this. The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Oh, and by the way, we are broadcasting live from the Hyundai studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers, like, you know, Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. What type of music would a band called the Schaumburg Boys play? Now, there's a lot of ways you could go here, because immediately you're thinking, okay, maybe they're a rock band. But perhaps the Schaumburg Boys are an EDM group. Is it possible that they do hip-hop? Or were you thinking country? I look forward to your text messages. Anthony Heron will join me to talk about college football? Question mark. Next, here on The Score.
Pat Hughes
and Ron Coomer here,
play-by-play voices of the Chicago Cubs, right here on 670 The Score. And right now, you're listening to Lawrence Holmes.
Weekdays, noon to 2, he's covering the Cubs and all of Chicago's teams, only on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com.
The official radio home of the Chicago Cubs, a radio.com sports station.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.